This podcast is a Uniting Heart and Soul production. Hello and welcome back to the Filthy Hope podcast. I know that we said that we were going to be getting straight back into our next series after talking about First Reformed, but unfortunately COVID messed up our schedule, so we do apologise for the short break. But we are back, and like we said last episode, we're diving into our next season of the podcast called Love, Sex and Jesus, where Ness, myself and the occasional guest are going to be talking about sexuality and intimacy in really honest and frank ways. The goal here isn't to be crude or offensive for the sake of it. We just want to open up communication and have conversations about things that are integral to all of our lives in a way that never really seems to happen in a church context. That being said, we are of course going to be talking about topics that are sexual in nature, so if you think that might be offensive or uncomfortable for you, feel free to skip through those sections. But if that's you, then we actually think you're exactly the sort of person that we want to have those discussions with. I do also need to put a strong trigger warning here up front. There are detailed descriptions of childhood sexual abuse in this episode, so please keep that in mind when deciding whether or not to listen to this episode. The usual swearing warning applies too, but if you're still listening to us at this point, then I'm sure that isn't a problem. Do us a favour by doing all the podcasty things, leave a review, a comment, whatever it is you can do on whatever platform you're listening to us on. I don't really know how all that stuff works, to be honest, but I'm told that it helps a lot in getting this podcast out in front of more people, which is exactly what we want. So sit back and enjoy my conversation with Ness about childhood encounters with sexuality and how sex on screen shapes how we view sexuality. Yes, how are you?
I'm good, Jonty. I'm excited about this series.
Yeah, it's been too long for people that are listening. I know last episode we said we'd be back next week, but COVID happened and we just haven't got around to... Well, this is the first opportunity we have to get back in front of the microphone. So apologies for the delay. Not much we can do about it, but we're back. And yeah, like you said, we're about to start a new season.
Super excited.
Which... we're calling Love, Sex and Jesus. We're going to be talking all about intimacy and sex and sexuality and all of those things that we tend not to talk about in church.
It could offend people.
It could well offend people, but I think that's why it's important to have these conversations, because I think and why I really wanted to dive into this as a topic, because why don't we talk about it? Why is it offensive? By very definition and our genetic coding and our biological need to reproduce for human beings to survive and move forward as a people, sex is a fundamental part of our existence. So I think just ripping off that Band-Aid and talking about it is really important.
And I don't think I've ever heard a minister talk about shagging from the pulpit, ever. Maybe only in reference to Sodom and Gomorrah.
Sure, which I think we'll get to at some point in the series. Yeah,
conversations around that, but and maybe Songs of Solomon. We talk about sex and intimacy there, but generally, I don't think ministers want to go there. No. It's a scary conversation.
Yeah, and I think because it is obviously such a personal thing, and sex is a lot to do with vulnerability as well. I think that's part of why people are scared to talk about it.
Yeah, I'd agree.
We're going to do our best to talk about it, honestly and frankly, but we're going to do our best also not to be offensive for the sake of being offensive. We're we're really just trying to start conversations.
And I think I need to say, for me to be authentically who I am, I can be offensive, but I don't mean to be. So I just want to put that out the front, up the front.
Sure.
I apologise if I hurt anybody's feelings by being what somebody might describe as crude. I'm not meaning to be. It's just in the need to be radically honest, I will just say it how I say it.
Well, and as listeners will it will become clear to listeners very soon, I think there's a very you part of you that, you know, it's not... everything out of all of our personalities is there for a reason. And I've learned, just talking off camera about your past over the last couple of days, and it's really, really interesting. And I think people will hopefully get a better idea of where you come from as well, and part of where that cultural understanding of what sex is comes
from. Definitely.
Yeah.
That'll help shape the conversation probably too, and people will probably be left feeling, oh, poor girl. That explains it.
Yeah. Well, and I think as well, on a serious note, there is some of that in previous podcasts. If people aren't up to date, go back and listen to those old episodes as well, because you share some of that as well.
Definitely.
Yeah. But before we dive in, of course, we have to do... well, not of course. I was wondering if we were going to do some different segments for the new season, but I mentioned that to a few friends and they said, no, you got to keep doing it. It's the best part of the podcast, which I don't know how I feel about that. But Vent Central, let's do it, Ness. What's grinding your gears at the moment?
Oh, wow. Don't you hate it when you get an invitation to go to a gig, an event, and it's a bit sketchy as to what the event really is. They say, come to this thing, there'll be drinks and networking, and it's going to be an opportunity for you to mix with people in the community. Great. So you set aside a couple of hours midweek away from your family to do this thing that you know is going to help you enter into the community space and get to know people that you don't already know.
Sure.
So you even actually invite others to come with you because that would be great for them as well. And then you turn up to the thing and you sit through the first 40 minutes of the gig watching a PowerPoint and you realise it's actually not a networking thing, it's actually a sales pitch. And you finally get to the slide where they're saying, and membership will cost $250. And you realise you've just been duped. That shit grinds my gears, brother.
Oh, yeah.
Because that, my friend, is an hour and a half I'm never getting back in my life.
And did you pay the membership fee?
Hell no. I was out of there, man.
You're out of there, yeah.
Totally, but that totally grinds my gears.
Oh, yeah.
But I should have known there's no such thing as a free lunch, as we say.
As they say, no. That's right. Mm. That's right. Yeah, that makes me annoyed just listening to
that. Yeah, it's annoying.
Yeah. Great. Well,
because I could have been at home watching Stranger Things, just saying.
Yeah, well, let's do a real quick gratitude for me right before I do my actual one at the end.
Yeah.
People that haven't seen the new, the finale of season 4 of Stranger Things, it's not really a spoiler, it's in the teaser trailer, but Eddie up on top of that bus shredding Metallica, if I didn't have COVID at the time, I would have been shredding myself, but I was sitting quietly, just like headbanging along. It was sick. 14-year-old me inside was like, yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing.
Pleasure.
If you're new to this podcast, that is, of course, the segment where we rant and rave about something that's grinding our gears, no matter how unimportant it might seem. No vent is
off limits.
Yeah, is off limits. We'd love to hear Vent Centrals as well, actually. If you something's giving you the shits, hit us up. We'll include it in future episodes. Well, let's dive into the main segment here. So the idea with this series, Love, Sex and Jesus, is that, as we said up top, we're going to be talking about intimacy and sexuality in a way that we don't tend to do at church. And I think that that's really important. But before we go into some more specific topics, which we'll be doing week to week to week, we thought we'd use this episode as an opportunity to kind of frame where we come from, to sort of contextualize our conversations a little bit. So what I wanted to do is, Ness, I'll ask you, there's a point, probably a number of points in every young person's development as a child, where you become aware of what sex is. You may not fully understand it yet, but you may kind of have this understanding, oh, adults are different, and that adults do things that are different to what I do in my life. And sex is a part of that. So I wanted to ask, as a young child, what your experience of, or how you first encountered this idea of sexuality and sex, like where did that come from?
Okay. I think to contextualise my upbringing, we've got to remember that I was born in 1966. I grew up into the late 60s and early 70s, and sexual promiscuity was at an all-time high because the contraceptive pill had become a thing, and women were getting on board with that. So I think that's important to know. So there was a freedom, I suppose, for people like my parents that had never been experienced quite before, because you could have sex with somebody and not fall pregnant. And I think people will certainly... my experience, were getting that on. I think as a young child, I grew up with my dad, who was a painter and an artist, and the way Dad earned money to raise our family was by doing beautiful artworks and Archibalds and all sorts of beautiful work, and then selling it. He'd have an annual exhibition and sell the work. And he worked also as a commercial artist. And he worked with Clemenger's, one of the big advertising agencies in Sydney. And Dad was at the top of his game in the 70s. Dad's artwork was really beautiful, and the house was full of it. But I thought all homes had artwork all over the walls, because that was my experience. And all over the walls in my home were massive nude paintings of my mum in all different positions. There was never any full wide vagina shots, but we had good bush shots and perky boob shots.
Tasteful nudes.
Pardon?
Tasteful nudes.
Yeah, tasteful nudes. Like, I would call it 1970s Playboy style positioning that would nowadays, I would consider that, if we were talking about soft porn, as just being that's just Kim Kardashian on every given day, in on Insta, basically.
Sure.
Mum would be reclined back with beautiful drapery over her, and Dad would paint her. And Dad, she would pose in Dad's studio, and Zoe and I would be running around the house, and Mum would be having a nude painting done of her. So I just thought that that was that's what mothers and fathers did. That was a normal thing. And then I'd get to see the beautiful painting, like, it's my mum that my dad did, and it's on the wall. And it's in the lounge room, and there's one in the dining room, and there's two in the hallway, and there's one in their bedroom. So I didn't attach as a little girl that to anything odd on any level. And I actually only made the connection not that long ago when somebody said to me, oh, Ness, it was great coming over to your place as a teenager because there was always lots of young boys there. And I said, yeah, Zoe and I always had heaps of young boys that would hang out at our place. And then somebody cheekily said, it's because there was all these nudes of your mum all over the wall. They were not coming to hang out with you and Zoe. They were coming to perv on your mum's tits on the wall. And I was so offended, John Deere, because I thought they were just my mates, you know. But I still didn't make that connection as a little girl to the nude paintings of mum on the wall. So But I remember them being on there, up with the beautiful paintings of seagulls and paintings of massive vistas and beautiful landscapes. But I suppose my first sexual encounter was my child sexual abuse. And it was violent, and it was really a violent event. Mm. So my first feeling of sexuality was that there's something really wrong going on here. And I knew that this was wrong because it hurt, and I was unsafe, and I had an intrinsic knowing that this was fucked up. And I think that traumatizes you.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. So my first sexual experience was as a little kid having a man's penis shoved in my throat. You know, while a woman grabbed my hand, my little hand, and forced it in my vagina. Mm. So, not a good day.
No, by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, and I think...
Sorry about that.
No, you don't have to apologise. I think... Yeah. You're the last person that has to apologise for that.
FYI, he's dead.
Which, again, see previous episode.
Oh. Dead ped.
Fuck off.
You know, people make jokes about a good cat's a flat cat,
yeah.
A dead cat. That's what I say about peds.
Yeah,
a good ped's a dead ped.
But I think something that really interesting that's come up there for me is this idea, like the distinction between nudity and sexuality. For a lot of people, they're kind of like the naked body is that first encounter with the quote-unquote sexual, but for you that's very different. It was just something that was...
Yeah. And I remember Dad, nudity was just a thing. Mum would walk around nude, Dad would walk around. I remember Dad's penis ding-donging against his thigh as he ran from the shower to the bedroom. Do you know what I mean? And not thinking anything of it other than that was funny.
Mm.
Just a funny thing. But they never covered themselves up, so I never... as a little kid, thought that there was anything wrong here. Mm. I don't ever remember thinking until after I was seven that there was... I never wanted to cover myself up either until after that.
Mm.
Yeah.
And does... And because we'll get into my experience of being a young child very shortly and how different that is... Did the church or faith or religion or biblical teaching come into that experience of the child at all? Like, where did that interface with that?
Oh, not at all. No, I did not grow up going to church on any level. No, I had a beautiful Christian grandma, but Mum had walked away from the faith and Dad never was a Christian at that point. So, no, I never had that thing going on at all.
Yep.
So I didn't know. I had nothing to sit that my thinking alongside.
Mm, interesting, yeah. We'll pick that thread up again shortly. I don't want to spoil too much of what we're going to talk about, but this idea that there is a single biblical teaching of how sexuality works that is a blanket for everyone is... ridiculous. And I think that like your story of growing up and where that comes from and in that that household is testament to that. Like you can't just throw even just the idea that the Bible says one particular thing about sexuality in itself is ridiculous, but then to try and force that on everyone as if it fits for everyone. I'm just hoping that this serves as a really good example of why that's ridiculous.
I would have loved to see what happened to me if I hadn't been sexually abused, if I'd just grown up in this free love home and if I was protected and I didn't have the actual abuse story, and it was just mum and dad doing expressions of free love, but I was kept safe. I wonder what that would have actually done to my psyche and my thinking about sexuality and what sex actually is.
Yeah.
I think that could have been most interesting.
Mm.
If there's families out there that have experienced growing up in the 60s and 70s and they weren't sexually abused, I'd like to hear that, how that played out for them.
Yeah, totally. In total contrast, yeah. I was born in 98, so I remember nothing of the 90s. Grew up in the early 2000s, really, in a Christian household. Went to church every Sunday morning. Both my parents, I love them dearly. Both Christians, both active, still active members in our local church. So my experience of what sexuality is was almost entirely coloured by that, in complete contrast to your experience of encountering that for the first time. And I think that it also actually informs a lot of why I want to do this topic for the podcast, because I, and this is through no fault of anyone, it's really just a cultural thing that I grew up in without any choice in the matter. Sexuality was something that was for a married husband and wife to have children. And other than that, it wasn't really something that you talked about, let alone considered in any other facet. Like, it was strictly for a man and a woman within a marriage. You have sex to have kids, and that's the only reason you would have sex. So why would you think about it otherwise? Which
wow.
is, in retrospect, I think, you know, I have my experience now as an adult and with sexuality is very healthy, but I think that is not the case for a lot of people who grew up in the same environment as me, because I had to really do a lot of my own reconsidering and recontextualizing what sexuality is within a Christian setting. But for a lot of people, that's really damaging. We were talking off camera about, you know, and this isn't everyone's experience, but I've heard multiple people talk about the experience of never even kissing or a few, like, wherever they drew that line before marriage, sex absolutely out of the question. All of a sudden you find yourself in a marriage with someone that you're meant to, you know, be having sex with for the rest of your life, and how twisted and damaged that actually leaves you as a sexual being as well. But I think really importantly, and this is going to tag us into the next little part of our discussion, is because sex wasn't something that was ever talked about really, my experience of what sexuality was came largely from movies TV. I remember vividly the first time I saw boobs on screen.
Oh my gosh.
Because it was like this almost...
What did you think?
I wish I could remember exactly how old I was. I remember the movie. It was The Pink Panther Strikes Back, or The Pink Panther Returns, whatever it's called. With the Russian spies all trying to kill Peter Sellers. And there's boobs towards the end. And I remember it blowing my mind and thinking, how is this not rated R18? And
sexy Russian spies with splits up to their thigh and
yeah, it's the
up.
Classic sexy Russian spy seduces the it's kind of like a Bond cliche, I guess, as well. But I remember that being this almost alien experience of something I hadn't even ever encountered in any setting other than, you know, everyone when they're tiny. Like, I remember showering. I have very, very vague memories of showering with my parents when I was 2, like, however old I was. But other than that, like, I nudity and sexuality was big no.
Did you ever see them in the nude?
I think I probably did. I don't have memories of it, but, like, I do have memories of showering with my parents, so I probably did, but it wasn't ever something, as soon as I was sort of old enough to have really formative memories. Mm. So I think this idea that sexuality and intimacy is something that we don't talk about in the church wasn't harmful for me, but I know has been for other people. And I think through Well, I that's part of why I want to have these discussions, because I know that there are people that are in the same position as me that probably would have benefited from honest discussion and conversation about what sexuality is and how to safely navigate it, whether or not you want to throw the Bible in there as well, which we will at some point. Even just, it's, you know, people are going to have sex, so let's talk about it and do it safely.
I think it makes me really nervous as a minister. We were talking about this a bit earlier about the different jobs that I do as a minister. I marry people, I baptise people, I bury people. And I was talking about weddings and how fearful I actually get for young couples on their wedding night after I've done the wedding. I leave and I come home and I often lay there and I have quite a sleepless night and I pray, particularly if they've been a Christian couple and I know they haven't had sex before marriage. The couples share with me all sorts of intimate details, and I actually feel really nervous for the ones that haven't had sex before they're married, because I think that's going to be a really scary night after this most incredible day, exhausting day, and then you've got to rock up and do that for the first time. That is like a nightmare in my brain.
Especially if we're talking people, and this isn't everyone, but people that haven't even, whether or not you have had sex, but whether you have even talked openly about it.
Yeah.
Or if it's just been this blanket no-go zone, all of a sudden you're not equipped, you're not educated, you're not like... I can only imagine that would be terrifying and really messy and tricky and confronting, potentially traumatizing.
And plus the day after, your vagina's sore. That's not going to be a good day.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, I'm thinking that's not going to be fun, you know, and you don't know what you're doing and it's the pressure. I just think there's a lot we need to discuss here.
Totally, totally. So what I want to pick up on then is this idea of... nudity and sexuality on film and on TV. And this is going to be a precursor to our next episode, where we're going to be talking specifically about pornography. So if you're thinking, you haven't even talked about pornography yet, we're going to talk about that next week.
It's coming.
It's on the way. But for me, like I said, a lot of what I sort of picked up on as a younger person, especially... as a teenager, as I discovered my love of movies, but even just watching things like music videos and being on Facebook and Instagram and things like that, sex is present in culture. And I think for particularly Christians, but I think, and this is partly me talking as someone that grew up in a Christian household and looking back retrospectively, it's really important it's really important that we don't categorize these things as separate, because as Christians we are called to live lives that are whole and full. Jesus talks about life to the fullest under God and in relationship with God. And when we remove sexuality from that as something that we don't hold as part of that ongoing living relationship with God, I think that's where it becomes really damaging and can be painful and, just damaging in general. So what I wanted to talk about is I love my parents. They're the best. But I think they were doing the right thing. But this idea that sex on film is bad and is unnecessary and should be skipped through or avoided. Obviously, the discussion about age appropriateness is another thing. If we're not going to show raunchy MA-15 rated movies to kids, that's not what we're talking about. But what I want to talk about is this idea that there is... being open to the idea that on film and in television and on our screens, there are depictions of good sex and depictions of bad sex. And there are... depictions of sex that are self-aware enough to know which is which.
Yeah.
And I actually want to suggest that for me, I really, really value now, in retrospect, some of those experiences I have watching films where I can look back and go, okay, when I watched that for the first time, I knew through the film that this was bad, that this wasn't good. And vice versa, there are experiences of watching films that had not even necessarily sex scenes, but just scenes of intimacy that were, okay, this is being depicted as good and healthy.
Yep.
So do you have any thoughts on this? Like,
my gosh, Bridgerton. Who doesn't love Bridgerton? I mean, it is beautiful. And I think it's couched in this is fairly healthy sexual imagery. I can't think of any aggro. There might have been one gropey aggro scene I can remember by two of the leads in a garden setting, but it was passion and it was consensual. But that is just two people loving each other when you see those main characters. And you get some nice side body shots and it's, you know, lifting up the pretty frock and you see her lovely leg and her stocking and bit of boob and his hot muscles. And they're just totally into each other and loving each other passionately. And they had sex before they got married. And they ended up married. Many of you know the story. But it's really beautiful to watch because it's happy. You're watching people love each other. They're not fighting with each other. It's tender. It's caring. It's nurturing. Then you see them holding each other and caressing each other. What's there not to like about that?
I'll have to I confess I have not seen any Bridgerton. I will say, though, part of the reason is every time I finish a film on Netflix and then as soon as the credits start rolling, it adds for fucking Bridgerton again. Dude, just let me...
It's a sign.
Give me like 2 seconds of credits before you even start throwing the next thing in my face. But maybe I'll have to give it a watch.
I know my partner watches. So there's it, that so. Beautiful happiness of what I would describe Bridgerton as being. But compared to Game of Thrones.
I was going to bring that up as well.
And that scene that we discussed.
Yeah, so this might be... People that know me know that I'm a big Game of Thrones fan. I actually really like the show and came to the show as a book fan as well. And I think the books and the show is a really interesting case study in exactly what we're talking about on-screen depictions of intimacy and sexuality. And I think... In contrast to the books, and people might get annoyed at me for saying this, but I do think that elements of Game of Thrones, particularly in some of the earlier seasons, are bad depictions of sexuality for a few reasons. But what I also want to say is that that doesn't mean that we shouldn't watch it. Obviously, person to person, it's down to your own discretion. But I think knowing that you are watching a bad depiction of sexuality and why it is bad, I think is also has value, almost in like watching someone make a mistake and going, great, I won't make that mistake myself. But I do think there are elements in that show. I think it was around season two, there was a term that was coined by some publication to describe some of those scenes, which were, I mean, on HBO you can get away with showing anything, which is part of why creatives go to HBO, because they're given complete freedom, which is great. But this idea, I think they called it sexposition, as in exposition, but with sex. And what they're describing are scenes of exposition, of important information dump, but to keep your attention during the scene that is perceived by whoever makes these decisions to be quote-unquote boring, to keep your attention, you just throw a pair of tits in there.
Yeah.
And there are a good number of these scenes in those earlier seasons in particular. And to me, I don't know, it's... Like I said, I think those quote unquote bad depictions of sexuality, I think knowing that they are bad depictions of sexuality, I think is really important. And what I feel really strongly about is not being passive about what you watch and what you take in, because we live in a culture of information. Like, we're in the golden age of information where you have access to everything all the time. And it's super easy just to become like a sponge that just sucks everything up and takes it on. But I think with something like Game of Thrones, which is also like a cultural phenomenon, like one of the biggest shows ever, I want to say, as opposed to what I have heard from other Christian organizations and other, you know, Christian communities, just don't watch that show. It's bad for you. Mm. No, watch it. And obviously there's another discussion to be had about, you know, if something's causing you to sin or causing others to stumble, and that's not to be taken lightly. But if you discern that you're able to watch it objectively and be a little bit discerning about what it is you're watching and how it's affecting you, I actually think it's important for us to encounter things that are different and challenging, and therefore you can watch it and go, oh, this is making me a bit uncomfortable. Why is it making me uncomfortable? What about it is making me uncomfortable?
And just because I see Tyrion doing a monologue to whoever the other character was off camera, but you see him delivering the monologue, but in the background there's a bedroom orgy going on with all the girls with their boobs and body parts everywhere, but it's all about unloading the information about what Tyrion has to say, right?
Yes.
But then I think to myself, just because I'm watching that bit, I have to hear what Tyrion's saying because he's stitching the story together, doesn't make me want to go and have an orgy on a king-size bed with 10 other girls with big tits.
And I'm going to be really honest here. Watching Game of Thrones and wrestling with how it made me feel, because I saw Game of Thrones, I think, first I was 16, a pretty formative age in terms of, you know, a teenage guy coming to terms with their sexuality. I got more of an education about sexuality from Game of Thrones than I did from church, which isn't hard because I didn't really get anything from church. That's not to say Game of Thrones is really good at teaching sexuality, because it's not.
No.
It's more that, you know, if you're not going to get it from church, you're going to get it from somewhere.
Game of Thrones has given us a spectrum, hasn't it? A very broad spectrum.
And to be clear, I think that the elements of Game of Thrones that are, I think, genuinely problematic are to do with misuse of power and some of those more aggressive, violent scenes, which are handled really well in the source, in the novels. They're treated really well as important plot elements that drive character, as opposed to some of those scenes in the show, particularly where they change character motivation and things like that, become really problematic
And disturbing to watch, because I think there's something deeply innate that we know that there's something wrong going on here when we see that. It's disturbing.
Yeah, totally.
And I think we're meant to be disturbed.
Well, when it's done well, I'm trying to think of another example. Actually, I've just thought of a perfect example. There is a film that I love, have seen 4 or 5 times now. It's not an easy movie to watch. It's a French film called Irreversible. I don't know if you've heard of this film. It's pretty infamous for having a pretty extended scene in the middle of a violent sexual encounter, but it is absolutely depicted as the most horrific thing that can happen to a person, because it is, and you watch it and go, this is awful, this is awful, but the whole film is about the trauma that causes and how people do or don't deal with that, and that's a really great example of, you know, you talk about Game of Thrones having sexually violent material in there. This is a film that has stuff in it that's worse than anything in Game of Thrones. But to me, and I think I saw it, I was in my 20s the first time I saw it, which it's going to disturb anyone. It disturbed me in my early 20s. I watched that film every year or two because to me, it's a really, really visceral reminder and a really good... I hate using that word good in relation to irreversible, but it depicts really, really viscerally something that you really do need to take seriously in a way that stays with you. I think of it as very similar to Requiem for a Dream, which is a film about drugs, and you leave that film just feeling awful and you go, yep, drugs will ruin your life.
Yeah, wow.
It's leaves you feeling a similar sort of way. So something that you may not have heard from a Christian before necessarily, but like, you know, that's a hard R-rated film that has some really tough material, but I think is worth watching more so than half the quote-unquote Christian movies that come out that are honestly awful. So I think, I don't know, I think it's a really important conversation to have, particularly, I mean, if you're listening as a parent or listening as a teenager or listening as a young adult or wherever you are in your sort of like walk in life, whether or not you are engaging in faith in any meaningful way or not, that's like not really part of it for us. We just want to talk about sexuality in a way that's healthy and life-giving, regardless of whether or not you follow Jesus, because it's a huge part of our lives. Without it, none of us are here, literally. So,
I'm really looking forward to having Julie Ryan, our psychologist, come on board and talk about porn and the effects on the brain. And that's going to be a super revealing discussion, I feel.
Yes.
And then I want to share about experience of teenagers and porn and what's happening to them.
Yeah, which...
And Christian kids experiencing this.
Even talk about, like, people in ministry, in healthy marriages. Like, pornography's rampant. Like, I think even people that... Well, first of all, people that say, oh, no, I don't watch porn. It's like, okay, sure, I don't believe you. But also this idea that porn is a small fragment of culture and something that's fringe is just so misinformed. Like even just the fact that the vast majority of the internet is pornography, it's really important to talk about. But I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves.
Can I share one story and you can cut it if you need to cut it, okay?
Let's go. Let's do it.
I have issues with my language. At times I get really passionate and I say words that offend people and I don't mean to offend people because I just grew up with, you know, four-letter words were joining words like and, but, and the. So
I always say to people, particularly non-Australians, that they, like, the word fuck for me, and this is a lot to do with me growing up at a public Australian high school, but also just the communities and the cultures that I'm a part of in Australia, the word fuck is just a warning that there's a noun on the way.
Yeah, you've said that.
Yeah.
I don't think it doesn't even hit my radar. I don't get offended by it and it just rolls off my tongue like and button thee.
And we're going to do an episode because we've actually had correspondences over the last few weeks.
People get very upset
about our use of language and we hear you. We're going to talk about it.
And I apologise that I've offended you in any way and it's a really tough thing for me. It's poor habit and it's probably most Christians would say it's you can be better than that, Vanessa. But then I always question, oh, why? Maybe you should just be less offended. I don't know. But I was having issues at this church that I really loved. And I was on the worship team and I was never using bad language on the platform at any point. I was singing beautiful, you know, shout to the Lord and all the lovely songs of the day. But the lead minister had took issue with me because I was just brutally honest all the time and I didn't pretend to be anything that I was not and I just was authentic all the time. So occasionally if shit or bum or fuck came out of my mouth, so be it. Anyway, he came over to my house with his Bible and his post-it notes, and he brought the worship team in and thought he'd just chastise me with poor behaviour and I need to step off the platform. And I was moved up to the sound desk as punishment.
Well, so, you can just say fuck into the fallback monitors for the worship team.
Sorry for the sound techs listening. So I was relegated up the back. Anyway, it was fine. I learnt a lot up there. It was quite interesting. Anyway, until I, you know, got my shit together, basically. Anyway, I had a large conversation with him and rang him and told him that I was really disappointed, that I felt like I was being punished. And I said to him this very sentence: how dare you criticise me saying shit or fuck when half your congregation are men out there in the congregation, and when they get home from church on Sunday, how do you know that they're not pulling themselves to porn? He said to me, don't you dare use that language with me. And I thought I must have used some big expletive, and I was quickly searching in my mind to think, what word did I drop? Boy, I've really gone over the line here.
Yeah.
And I said, what word? And he said, pornography. And I thought,
a filthy swear word.
I'm a filthy bitch, aren't I? Anyway, do you know the irony of that, Jonty? I pressed a button that day and I didn't even realise it. That minister is no longer a minister. And guess what was found on his church computers?
Of course.
Oh, the big P word, baby.
Which just goes to illustrate exactly what we've been talking about. When you don't have open communication about it, mm-hmm. and you separate those parts of your life mm-hmm. from the totality of living a full life mm-hmm. under Christ, that's how shit like that happens.
Yep, such a shame.
Yeah. And almost the worst part of that is I'm not surprised.
Yeah. Breaks my heart.
Yeah. So, next week, we're just going to talk about it.
The big P.
We're going to talk about, ready to bleep out this swear word, we're going to talk about porn.
Not penis?
Yeah. Well, I think unless we're going to dive into gratitude in a second, is there anything else we need to cover in this main segment?
No, I just feel like a big laugh.
Yeah, well, we'll pick up on everything next week when we continue this conversation, which I'm really looking forward to. Yeah. So to finish off, again, if you're new to the podcast, we, as well as Vent Central, we have an ongoing segment called gratitude, which is a word we came up with that is a cross between grit and gratitude, where we talk about something that we have gratitude for amongst the grit and the realness of life, tying into what this whole podcast is about. So I'm up for gratitude this week.
Take it away.
I had been thinking about using this for a gratitude anyway, and then I got COVID and I doubly want to use this as a gratitude. When I got COVID, there were 3 or 4 days, I think, where I was like just totally out of it and couldn't really do anything other than watch movies and play video games. I never really called myself a gamer. I didn't really, I didn't own a console until I think I bought my PlayStation as a end of semester gift for myself in 2019. So not like, I'm not one of those people that have, when we did have a PlayStation at home when I was a kid, it was because it came free with our TV and I was only ever allowed to use it during the school holidays. So not a gamer, you know, not part of that gaming culture, really in any meaningful way, until I bought myself a PlayStation. In March of this year, a little old game called Elden Ring came out, which is part of the... it's... And I'm explaining this to you because I'm assuming your knowledge of Elden Ring is pretty minimal. People listening may know exactly what I'm talking about. It's from a company that make a lot of very similar games, kind of in the same... Not strictly series, but the same kind of world of games.
Is it like a killing game?
Not strictly. So the most famous series within them is called Dark Souls. There's three Dark Souls games, the Demon Souls game. My favorite is a game called Bloodborne. There's another called Sekiro, which is also awesome. Awesome game. But they are notoriously difficult. Notoriously difficult. Elden Ring is the newest one, and it was, we just talked about Game of Thrones, was worked on by George Martin, who wrote the Thrones novels, The Song of Ice and Fire. He did a lot of the world building for this new game, and it is massive. It is a huge game, whereas the previous ones, the FromSoft games, are very linear. This is an open world fantasy game. It's just the amount of content and the map is massive. I have sunk so much time into this game.
During COVID?
Especially during COVID. Since March, I'd been playing it pretty consistently anyway because I love these games and just got so immersed in it. I think, I haven't played in a few days, I think I'm at 120-something hours.
Can I ask you, do you pick up in the world where you left off?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes. Still on my first playthrough. Players, if you're listening and hear that I'm still not finished at 120 hours, like I said, I'm not by any means good at any of these games. I just really love playing them. But specifically through COVID, I couldn't do anything other than just sit on the couch and veg out. And I played Elden Ring for a few days straight. And I think I lost count at about 50 or 60 attempts, could not get past this bastard of a boss called the Fire Giant. Again, if you know the game, you'll know exactly who I'm talking about. Absolute fucking nightmare to get past. And the reason I bring this up as a gratitude thing is because I have, for a long time, had lots of issues with sleep. Sleep has always been something that I have a love-hate relationship with. When I am asleep, good luck waking me up, but getting to sleep has always been an issue. I've found over the last few years of having a PlayStation, a couple of hours in front of the PlayStation gets me right in the right headspace to go to sleep. So particularly over COVID, but over the last few months having had the game, Elden Ring has just, I've immersed myself in it almost completely and just loved every second of it, even if I want to throw the controller across the room because I've lost to that fucking Fire Giant again. In fact, I know that there are people that listen to this podcast that play Elden Ring. Please let me know that. Get in touch. I just want to be reassured that I'm not just really bad for having lost to the Fire Giant that many times, because I know from people that I talk to about it.
You sound like a gaming loser.
It's notoriously difficult. Look, if you told me 3 years ago that I'm going to be talking about a video game for this long, I would have said get lost.
So did you kill him?
I got past him eventually.
Excellent.
I haven't finished yet.
What happened?
I'm close. I grinded and eventually got him, and then usually I would jump up and swear at the TV and flip off whichever boss I just beat, but I was so sick and beaten down by the experience in general that I sort of sat there and exhaled and went, oh, great, that's 10 hours, I'm not getting back. So I'm genuinely have gratitude for the way that that game has sort of allowed me to sleep. That sounds not like
no,
a good thing,
cool.
But yeah, it's been really good.
We've all got our strategies, Jonty.
And as soon as I finish, I'll be straight back into Bloodborne. That about does it for us, I believe. Tune in next week. We're going to talk about pornography. It's going to be really interesting. In the meantime, please do get in touch. We had a fair few correspondences in the little break that we had. I think we might try and respond to some of them on the podcast soon. But feel free, keep getting in touch. We love hearing from you. We read all of them, even if we don't get to respond to all of them, we do read them. Tune in next week.
And I apologize if I offend you. Just don't listen. Don't you reckon? Just don't listen.
The sincerity in your voice is
no, I was being sincere. Just don't listen.
Yeah,
go and listen to something else, you know.
Yeah.
Joyce Meyer. Put her on.
She's great.
She's awesome.
Great. Yeah. We're not Joyce Meyer.
No.
Though, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that about does it. We'll see you next week when we talk about pornography and we continue our series about intimacy and sexuality. We'll see you there.
I'm Ness.
And I'm Jonty, and this was the Filthy Hope podcast. See ya. Thanks for listening. And once again, do all the nice things on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever it is that you're listening. And feel free to get in touch. Like we said earlier, we're going to start reading out messages that you send in and responding to some of them on the podcast. So if you have a story that you want to share with us, Event Central, or a gratitude, or even just a question that you'd like us to try and answer, don't hesitate to reach out. You can do that on Facebook, Instagram, or via email at filthyhopepod@gmail.com. The link to our private Facebook group will be in the show notes too. We interact with our listeners even more directly there, so if that sounds interesting to you, please don't hesitate to join up. We'll see you next week as we talk about pornography and where faith and God intersects with it. Until then, take Jesus seriously and don't be a dick.